6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take it to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never.
This is your host today, Brenda Conkle, for the May 14th version of A Public Affair. And today I have several people in the studio with me. They are folks from Occupy Madison. And if you've been listening, you know I've done several shows on Occupy. We had the activists in here. We had the attorneys in here. And now I think we probably have the most important group of people in here, the people who actually lived on the site and the people who were the ones that, were the ones that, till the very end that packed up the site and are actually planning to continue to move forward as well. So I want to thank everybody for coming in, and I want you to quickly go around the room and just introduce yourselves so people know who you are.
Good morning, Will Gruber.
Good morning, Harold Morgan.
Hi, Alan Barkoff.
Hello, this is Daniel Callahan.
All right, and thanks, gentlemen, for coming down. We may be joined by a few other people, depending upon if they can make it here or not. So I know you guys are working on a press release, and you want to talk about some of the things that Soglin's been talking about the site. I kind of want to go around the room and ask each of you, what's the most important thing you want people to know about Occupy that maybe got misunderstood in the press? And I kind of want to start out that way so that we can explore those topics a little bit further and make sure that it's the things that you folks want to talk about. So, Will, why don't you go ahead and start out?
I'm interested in people understanding that they don't seem to have yet is that the 99% really does encompass everyone, including the homeless. And I think we're maybe the best example of how things are progressing.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.
Hey, Harold?
I'm going to read off what has been written. Occupy was not a place to be feared. It was a place where people who otherwise would be alone were able to find community and a safe place to be and love.
All right, thank you.
This is Alan. I didn't actually live on the site. But I am a strong supporter of the site and the people who were living on the site. I guess one of the things I'd like to emphasize is that people on the site were not all chronically, continually homeless, although there were some people that would fit that category, but there were a number of people that were working people. They would work during the day, come back to the site at night, and just couldn't afford the rent that is required of them in Madison. And hardly anyone on the site, I would say, were just loafers. There was a lot of work that went into the site, from chopping wood. We had a couple of cooks out there that did a lot of the food preparation. So it wasn't just a bunch of loafers living off of the surplus of everybody else in the community.
All right. And Dan, what would you like people to know?
Well, I lived on site since January, and I was there to the end. I helped pack up everything and all the way to the end. So I've seen a lot. It was a community that we cared about each other. We looked out for each other, made sure things got done that needed to be done. But everybody seemed to care about each other. They stopped caring about each other about 3 weeks before the end because they had nowhere to go. They didn't know where to go.
Caring about each other. I think they were concerned with that issue.
Scared.
Yeah.
They're scared.
They didn't know where to go.
Caring was still there.
Yeah, I think people started to get a little
scared
and anxious and made people act maybe in some ways that they didn't act before when they felt safe and secure,
exactly,
at least in the
exactly being taken away.
Yeah. Let me ask, a lot of people have said, where did everybody go? I don't want you to specifically disclose where you went, but where did people go to? I mean, did people just like take off and go back to Chicago where the mayor wanted them to go, or what did people do?
Well, being a resident now, I was lucky enough during the Occupy. I'm sorry. during the Occupy, I was lucky enough to hook up with a few people in the city that helped me find a room to rent. I met up with a girlfriend. This community has helped me in great amount. So
that's awesome. A success in a way, right? From the site, because without meeting the people there, you wouldn't have had the
opportunity. I'd just be the guy running around screaming recall Walker.
Right. All right. How about other folks? Where did other folks go to?
I've seen most of them out in parks, sleeping in sleeping bags. Some of them pitched tents under trees in parks. Yeah. Some went back up to the square and are sleeping on benches. Me and a few others, we were staying at campsites and, you know, working at Labor Ready and places like that. And so, but we're still there for HGA and everything that we believe in when it comes to Occupy.
Somebody want to explain, you have a GA 3 times a week and people all show up. What happens at the GAs? What do you guys talk about?
Sorry, I think it's a work in progress. Sure. I tried last night for my second attempt at co-facilitating the meeting, and there's a lot to be learned. It's going a little smoother, if you ask me, right now, because the people are talking freely and everybody's taking turns throwing their ideas into the mix. And finding a new site is primary in our minds, I think.
Okay, so I guess I had another question, too, about... So you guys talked about it being a safe place to live, and there's been a lot of, particularly the mayor, saying some comments about it being like needles being on the side and it being violent and about drugs. And I know that upset quite a few people, and I'm wondering what kind of responses do you guys have to the types of comments that the mayor was saying? I think Carol wants to go first.
To be honest with you, I wake up every morning and clean Occupy Madison. And those are like the cigarette butts and maybe a beer can or two. I never found one needle, ever. And I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I clean that. You can ask Dan, you can ask anybody else. I'm up at 6 in the morning, and I'm walking around nitpicking for everybody to help. That was kind of like my contribution to Occupy Madison. I never, ever found one needle, ever.
Yeah, I think that to me was a little frustrating as well, because I think almost everybody I talked to said they hadn't seen anything on the site, with one exception. And maybe, Dan, you want to talk about what that one exception might be?
Well, I'm diabetic. And there's at least 6 or 7 other people that I know on site were. I may have lost a syringe, thrown in the garbage. Somebody picked it up. I'm sure. I've been there since January, helping Terry and Tiny with security and that, and we never seen anybody doing any heroin. Diabetics, yes, there may have been that. But if they thought that this was heroin or something like that, they should have tested that and done some investigating or arrest somebody.
Yeah, Alan?
As someone who did not live on the site, maybe some of the others could might want to correct me on this. But I think one of the problems on the site was the lack of ability of the Madison Police Department to enforce city ordinances, such as the open drinking law. People are not allowed to have an open container of alcohol on any city street or sidewalk. Yet because of the unique type of permit, state permit, that was given for the site, people could drink openly right in front of a police officer, and the police officer wouldn't be able to do anything. Once word got around about this on the camp and to people off the camp, then there was a lot of alcohol, and I think that led to, there was some violence on the site. Some of it was brought from off the site onto the site, and I really don't know how much violence was caused from people on the site, but I tend to think that alcohol was a contributing factor to some of that, and and the lack of the ability of the police to enforce the open drinking law on the site contributed to the excessive amount of drinking on the site by some people.
Correct. And I would say also our lack of having any ability to enforce our community ideas of maybe keeping alcohol under some sort of a...
So I think that's a big issue for people. They think, oh, these are just a bunch of people who have alcohol and drug problems, and that's why they're there, because they can just drink. I mean, this is the things that were being said, because they can just drink freely down there on the site. But in fact, you guys actually had rules that you tried to enforce,
yes,
correct?
What good neighbor policy.
And what kind of rules did the good neighbor policy entail? Like, what kind of things did you ask the good neighbors to do?
Well, I know there was a no alcohol policy. Respect for one another. Certainly no violence was a part of the good neighbor policy, and that everyone should contribute to the maintenance of the site. And I think that worked, from what I understand. That worked pretty well at the beginning. People on the site enforced that good neighbor policy. But again, once the some people on site and people off-site found out that the police could not enforce the open drinking city ordinance, then the people on the site who took a major responsibility for keeping order just were not able to keep order anymore. And so that led to a deterioration over the last period of time on the site.
To be honest, we gave up. to be mm-hmm. totally honest, we gave up.
Because you couldn't control it?
Because we couldn't. Yeah. And the police, Dan, my friend over there, we tried.
Mm-hmm.
But we gave up. We gave up at the end.
I don't know if we gave up or if we just tried to maintain it the best we could with this situation without a ability to enforce obvious good baby policies. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. That's where the stress came in.
Without getting in an actual physical violent fight.
Yeah.
We had one choice or two. Either get mean and pick fights, which the good neighbor policy was in us, but it wasn't in other people.
Sure.
So we couldn't really demand things, but we could, you know, among ourselves, we were all good.
Sure.
Okay? But the people that came from out of, from out of the city and everywhere else that heard about Occupy Madison, that used the out of it, okay? That's where the problems came from. It didn't come from the Madisonians.
I'm hearing you, but I'm kind of leaning towards not totally agreeing with you there. That feels like maybe what we were getting from Soglin as far as the ability to possibly open up another encampment in the future, but only for Madison residents, because he's trying to keep those riffraff from everywhere else who might be homeless from coming here, because it's the most wonderful place to be homeless ever. The winter times are just fun
everywhere.
Oh my gosh, it's the best place in the world to be on the street.
Yeah,
maybe not so much.
But how about Occupy when it first started?
Oh,
so before the homeless came and joined us, how many police calls were there?
None.
But I wouldn't blame it. Excuse me, I wouldn't blame it just.
Just on the homeless, but what came from that when they allowed the drinking in that.
See, it was the drinking. It's not the actual homeless, because I was homeless at the time and had been for months and months. I helped move the camp into place there on 800, and I wouldn't even sleep in the camp at first because I'm kind of a to myself kind of guy, quiet and trying not to be noticed for the most part. Hard to believe sometimes. But it took me a couple weeks to get in, and numerous homeless people were with the movement itself. The idea of this recalling Walker and that the 99% are getting screwed even prior to being homeless, let alone, excuse me, pardon my language.
You know, I want to give an opportunity for callers to call in, and if you are just joining us, I'm the host today, Brenda Conko, and we are talking with some of the folks that had lived at Occupy and just some of the the things that have been said about Occupy, we want to sort of get an opportunity to set some things straight and have you hear directly from people who live there. And I think people have all acknowledged that there's been some things that didn't go so well at the site. There's been things that went really well at the site. And I think people want to have the opportunity to make sure that people know that people are aware of the things that went wrong and that they want to make sure that, that some of the facts get out there, maybe in a different kind of way than what they have been in the press lately. Yeah. So I'd really want to encourage everybody to call in today if you have any questions, things that you've heard that you are kind of curious about, because I think these guys have been very open and honest about what's been going on at the site and are willing to talk about it. So if you want to call in, the phone number is 256-2001 or 1-866-899-WORT, which is 9678. And again, I have Will, Danny, Harold and Alan with me today here in the studio. And really, if you have any questions at all, please feel free to ask. One of the things that you guys have been sort of been compared to is right across the street from the site was the Porchlight Day Center. And how come they could enforce their rules over there and you guys couldn't enforce rules? Do you guys know why that was different?
From what I understand, they have a contract with the city and pay a dollar rental for that structure and therefore allowed to enforce their own rules and keep things under hand in hand, which we were not.
Sure.
So the police were able to come onto that particular site and enforce certain things that they wouldn't be enforcing down at the Occupy site because they were paying rent.
Sure.
Porchlight, to me, is a joke, all right? And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say it bluntly. They're all about money. They don't really care about any of us. I'm not going to name names that work at Porchlight, but if you're not one of their little, quote, little pets, you get treated like you know what, all right? And the little pets walk in, and they're like gods. And that's Porchlight. That's Porchlight. And that's, and I hate to say it, and that's Grace Church. And you know what? They do a great job for the community. But they are really, really, really backstabbing people. And you know what? Porchlight, you know who pays for Porchlight? The state of Wisconsin and the people that pay taxes.
Yeah, City of Madison and Dane County give quite a bit of money to Porchlight. And I know, Alan, you haven't probably weren't familiar with the homeless community before being involved with Occupy, but I know I've heard you speak about some things that you've learned and some things that you've heard people say over time. Can you just share some of the things that you've been sort of surprised to learn?
Yeah, this has been an incredible learning experience for me. Before the Occupy movement began, and especially before the homeless communities started coming to the Occupy site, I literally never knew anyone who was homeless. And so for the first time, I got to know some people who were homeless and are homeless, and I've gotten to know them as individuals, rather than just as someone I would pass on the street shaking a can for change. So, and after getting to know some of them, I learned about some of the stories and how they became homeless and why they're still homeless. And after that, I realized that something was wrong in how homeless people are dealt with here in Madison, and maybe other places too. And so I started looking into the bus pass situation, which I think needs a lot of improvement. I started hearing stories and talking, actually, with the Reverend who runs the shelter at Grace Episcopal Church, and I learned that that is certainly a far less than ideal situation. And I learned about how homeless people have to get bus passes. There are so many obstacles put in their way for lifting themselves out of homelessness. I'd say it's a miracle that that any of them do lift themselves out of homelessness. I talked with one person who put it this way. I don't know if this was original, but it certainly made sense to me. Once you fall off that bottom rung, he said, it's just about impossible to get yourself back up on the ladder. And so it's been a real learning experience for me in that way.
Okay, can one of you tell us about that bus pass situation? How do people get a bus pass if they want to go look for a job?
Well, I could say something, and then maybe the other people here could say something, too, about that. If someone does not have, if someone is homeless and obviously does not have enough money to pay for bus fare, if they're spending the night at Grace Episcopal Church, there's a van that will take them a few miles out toward the Beltline to Hospitality House. Out at Hospitality House, if you get there in time, you can get a two-ride pass. That'll get you either downtown again, or if you have the organizational wherewithal, it might get you out to the Aberg Job Center. Once you get out there, assuming that you make all the connections right and don't get lost and are able to organize your day with the bus schedules, once you get enrolled in a program out there, I believe they will give you a 10-ride pass for a certain period of time. Keep in mind that with these bus passes that are given, I'd say rather miserly, you have to do all of your chores, which is get to places where you might be able to get a meal, get to places where you can do laundry, and that's not even counting job interviews that you might have to get to. So those limited amount of bus passes have to be used for all of those jobs. And this is not even to say that when you're homeless, it's pretty hard to get yourself presentable for a job interview. And I'm going to let Hap address one other issue that he seems wanting to address.
When you go out to Aberg, or you go out to the Hospitality House, the one thing they always say to you is you have to go apply for jobs, which I commend them in that sense. But the problem with that is you can walk right outside of the Hospitality House and watch people selling the bus tickets. Okay? And the other problem, like Alan was saying, all right, you catch the bus at Grace. You get a two-ride bus pass. Well, you got to catch a bus back. So basically, you got one bus ticket. All right? How long does it take to fill out a job application and sit there and wait for somebody to look? So by then, let's say, I'll just say from here, I want to go apply at Red Lobster. I'm a waiter. I've been a waiter. I've been a cook all my life. I go out to Red Lobster from here. I fill out the application. I wait for the manager. Guess what? My 2 hours are up. So guess who's walking? And who wants to walk from Red Lobster back up to the Capitol? And that's and then the other part is, like Alan was saying, they only give it out to a certain number of people. So if you're not there at 7:30 or 8, whatever, you basically, you know what.
All right, thanks.
You said that you're not supposed to swear.
There you go. We've been joined by two other folks, so I want to have them introduce themselves. Go ahead, Sophia.
Sophia Martinez, how are you?
And you're one of the site occupants?
Yes, I am, yep.
And?
Michael Alte for Alzana Occupy Site for 3 months.
All right, and I'm glad you guys could join us, particularly since you normally would be working today, so I very much appreciate that you're here today. We've been talking just generally about a bunch of different issues, but since Sophia joined us, I wanted to ask, how is being a woman on the site different than all the other guys? Did it make a difference to you?
No, not really, not at all. No, not at all. They've always been very respectful, you know. I mean, no, not as so ever. They always treated me as a equal one.
Yeah. Yeah. Although you were pretty much outnumbered, but there were a surprising amount of women that were there.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we had a couple of women there. Yeah.
Yeah. And let me ask too. That thing that Soglin kept saying about people should go back to where they came from, can I just ask, how many people do you think were actually from Madison that were on the site or have been in Madison for at least 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Well, I'll say at least 75%, 80% of them, they were from Madison.
It's interesting because that number would be higher than what they see in the shelters.
Yeah.
So.
And I disagree with that. I would say 50%.
50%, yeah.
To be honest, I've lived here all my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I know most of Madison. I've lived on the west side. I've lived on the east side. So a lot of the people there I've never seen before. So at least I would have seen them.
We do have a caller. And again, if you've heard anything that you would like to have clarified or cleared up, I'd really love you to call in and ask the questions that are out there, because I know people are asking me questions all day long. But caller, why don't you give me your first name and what's your comment or question?
Yeah, my name is Michael. Basically, I just have a few comments about this whole homelessness issue. I think what I find the most revolting thing is that there are people that actually have jobs but still can't afford to find a place to live anywhere. I mean, just for that factor alone, I think people should be in the streets. There's simply no excuse for that. I mean, it's easy to just write the homeless off, say, oh, they're doing it by choice, or they're mentally retarded, or they have problems with substances. But it's my understanding that there's a lot that actually have jobs, and I find that revolting in itself. I guess the other thing I find revolting is the casual attitude we have today towards homelessness. It's viewed just as another condition of life. Like you might say, "Oh, he has a cold or something like that, or he has the flu," and then we just talk about people. Oh, they're homeless. You know, it's just a way station in life. And I find that attitude, that total callousness, equally outrageous. And I'll take my answers off the air. Thanks for taking the call.
Excellent. Thanks for calling in. Does somebody want to talk about jobs? Like, there's quite a few people there who lost their jobs for various reasons or were trying to work, but why don't you just find housing if you get a job? Can somebody sort of address that question?
Well, because nowadays it's so hard, you know? I mean, it's the steps that you have to do to get a place, they check your credit, they check your, you know, and they have so many, I mean, you have to have a checklist to get a place nowadays. And that's what's getting hard for a lot of us, because we don't check a few things, so they deny us, you know?
And they're assuming that you have enough, you have to have a percentage over the monthly rent. They have some kind of figure they come up with that decides whether or not you have enough money to pay your rent, which I find very confusing.
Yes.
I could pay the rent.
Yes, absolutely. But it's
all right. The hardest thing about jobs, in my opinion, is a lot of the homeless people don't have cell phones. So you go apply for a job, you don't have a telephone number. So if they want to call you back for an interview, guess what? unless you walk into a, you know, and I apply at restaurants and things, but even if they're going to industrial places and stuff, if they don't have a cell phone, how are they going to call you back?
Personally, I just had a bad winter, and I came back from Illinois after staying with some friends for a couple months, and I didn't have no place to get on my feet. And with Madison coming after me with parking tickets, I have over $3,000 worth of parking tickets. I've had my car impounded twice, once when I started my first roof last August. And Occupy was a place for me to get on my feet and a place for community, and where we actually got to enjoy the company of a diverse group of people. There's a lot of people that want to work that can't find work, and there's a lot of people that do work that just refuse to pay. For myself, I have a dog. It's $400 for me to rent one bedroom, and right now it's cheaper to camp.
Yeah, we enjoy that, camping.
You know, you talked about the tickets. You want to explain why you got so many tickets? Because I think some people maybe don't think about this in this kind of a way. But
if you sleep in your vehicle, or if you have more than one vehicle, you're constantly fighting downtown Madison's parking officials. They constantly want to ticket you or tow you to another block. And then if you don't, even if you're on a payment plan with most of your tickets, you miss a payment or you forget to go into court to put the rest of your tickets on there, they'll put another tow on there, they'll impound your truck, it's another $500-$600 to get it out. I don't understand why they can't just call me and say, hey, you got a couple more tickets that need to get put on the payment plan. We're all just trying to get on our feet here, and it seems like they're hindering us all the time.
I think Mayor Soglin is trying, because he is so against the homeless. I'm going to tell you a story. I have been walking in an alley for 3 years, grabbing cardboard and sleeping where I sleep. Okay? 2 days ago, I walked back to get some cardboard, and I got a $429 ticket for walking in that same alley that I have been walking in for 3 years. All of a sudden, you're trespassing. Well, if you look in that alley, the trespassing sign is on a wall over there. The alley's this way. There's no trespassing signs in that alley whatsoever. There is one going down the steps. And I'll say where that is. It's by the Concourse. And I'll even say the police officer's name. Jeff Farrell gave me a ticket. And he has seen me for 3 years walking in that same alley to get cardboard to sleep where I sleep. Now, you don't think something's going on? Something's got to be going on.
Yeah, that does sound unusual. We do have another caller on the line, and if you want to join us, the phone number is 256-2001 or 1-866-899-WRT. And again, I am talking with now five residents of Occupy, as well as Alan, who has been a supporter for quite some time. And caller, why don't you give us your first name and what's your comment or question?
Hello, this is Dave calling. I'm a Madison native. I'm also about to hit the age of 59, which we know is real old. And the reason I want to touch on that is that this is something that nobody talks about. No politicians, of course, want to talk about it. And to back up a step, I'm grateful to your station for featuring shows on the homeless. I usually don't chime in. I usually don't associate with the other homeless people, but anyway, what I'd like to touch on is this subject. It's called ageism, and a few of you have probably heard that, and the discrimination against older people in the workplace. It's supposed to be illegal, and this is a law throughout the country which has no teeth. What I'd like to see is either throw the law out because it's not enforced, or better yet, start enforcing the law, and the whole deal about that is probably can figure out is that insurance companies are behind this primarily. And we know that insurance companies have bought off many of our politicians on both sides. And the thing is, if you're 50 years old, you are really old. So someone like me who is still able to work and looking, it's like F you. We didn't hire you because we found a better candidate, which when you hear that story, it means they hired some 20-something guy who had, if that, one-third work experience. So the subject of ageism, it's part of the homeless problem, I would say. It is for me, and I guess I'll leave it at that, and thank you for hearing me.
All right, I want to thank you for calling in. Yeah, you know, it's the health insurance definitely is a huge part of the issue, I know. I have seen people be very concerned about hiring people who are older because of that issue. And also I've been sort of noticing, too, that I think the older you get, the more health problems you have. And so I think that's been playing a huge role for some folks as well.
While I was out at the camp, I met someone who was susceptible to seizures. And I worked with him to get him his medication. Periodically, especially before, I believe, before the encampment and at other times during the encampment, he would have a seizure. And people, you know, being who they were, would, you know, call 911, the ambulance would come. and they would take him to the hospital. Now, I guess what came to light for me was if this person were being properly treated by the medical community, it would have been far cheaper to do that. And I hazard to guess how expensive each night in the hospital was, not hotel. They didn't take him to a hotel. They took him to the hospital. And how much that ambulance ride costs. So to me, the amount of money we're spending on health care is far in excess of what it would be if we just took care of people who needed help.
I think one of my biggest concerns, too, is just to follow up on that, is that, you know, when people were all around each other, they had cell phones and they could call when something like that happened. If you're out in the woods by yourself or if you're more isolated or you're not with people who have a phone, then what happens when that happens?
Yeah. And one of the things also at Occupied was that, I mean, we were living in a community that anything happened, we would call. Now imagine now that everybody's separated. Imagine if HAP has something and, I mean, who's going to make a phone call, you know? And that's one of the things that's, it's kind of bummer that Occupied's not helping anymore because, I mean, that community that we had of trying to help each other was fantastic. Yeah.
Someone want to talk a little bit about maybe for people who only drove by and saw those big tents, what kind of things did Occupy provide for folks that besides that sense of community and that sense of safety? I mean, there was a whole food kitchen. And
yeah, we had food. We had clothes. If people needed clothes, we'd give some clothes, you know.
Medical.
I'm going to read this one more time. There was a place where people who would otherwise be alone found community and a safe place to be and love.
Not only that, HAP, we found friends.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And even if we can afford to get food, we still come out and see you guys when it's lunchtime.
I think love is the best thing we found in that community.
That community also, I was spending a lot of my money just to eat each day, and that's gas money to get to work when I do have work. You know, I'm self-employed, doing my best with my construction company and all the fees and work comp and insurance kind of. It was take care of my son and him having a roof for me, and I chose him. So, but yeah, the community at Occupy did a lot of great things for a lot of people, and they gave us a chance to make sure everybody was okay. If there's a seizure, there's 10 people right there making sure he's okay and making sure the ambulance knew where to go. And it was not just a community. It's the best one I've been a part of.
You know, that's the part where Soglin keeps saying, oh, it was just a romanticized version of what was going on down there. And I think I wish he would be here to see you all talking to each other and talking about it. And I wish he'd have maybe been paying closer attention when you came to the council meeting, because I think that's part of what he's missing when he talks about the site. He forgets people are people. And
I just don't understand him, why, you know, he's doing what he's doing. I just don't get it.
So we're going tomorrow night, right?
Absolutely. Everybody? I'll be there.
Yeah,
I'll be there. Yep.
He seems to have a focus on the low income of the community and kind of just drops in the homeless community along with that when it's two completely different worlds. And hopefully we'll be able to go to enough meetings to make him understand that we have whole issues of our own that maybe we can.
And another thing is it's a lot of us don't have mental issues, you know?
What, are you saying something about me?
No, I mean, you know,
yeah, we are.
The only way that we can get helped nowadays is if you are crazy or, you know, I mean, it's outrageous, you know.
It seems like maybe he's getting old. He used to care about people, and now he's more worried about his retirement.
Yeah.
No, he's more worried about his reputation and things to me.
Well, if you guys could talk directly to him and said, here's what we think should happen. What would you want to be different for the community? What would you want?
I think until he does something to help the homeless and to directly get involved. I think he should come out here and sleep on the streets with us.
Thank you.
And meet some of the people out here. I think he should have to live just like us, people trying to work every day.
I think we should
take care of one.
I've got a tent for you, Soglin. You ready?
No. You know what? He doesn't deserve a tent. Let him sleep like me.
I'll come sleep next to you if the mayor does. Yeah. I'll be right there in Veterans Plaza with the sleeping bag.
Let him sleep like me on a goddamn tarp in a sleeping bag over me. Okay? Let the man do it once.
With no cardboard, he gets the tip.
I don't think he has it in him. I'll issue a challenge.
I can't get no cardboard anymore. I can't go in the alley.
I think Alan's been wanting to jump in and say something.
I'd like to mention that there is a city council meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, at 6:30, room 201, at the city-county building. And what they will be discussing, I understand, will be taking proposals for future development on city property. And I would like to say that a vacant city property, whether they're buildings or land, should not be just for developers and realtors. As long as there are homeless people in the area, some of that property or building should be devoted to them. And hopefully that will be brought out at the city-county building at the meeting. And it would be great if other people who care about this issue would come and support another site and or facility for people who are homeless here in this area.
Well, unfortunately, you see who cares.
Or maybe that site that we were at already that was going to be built on
by the 30th almost.
Yeah, right.
That maybe we could go back to that site that the plans have changed in the meantime and it's just kind of sitting there empty. It's going by. It's kind of sad.
Real quick. I think awesome. Alan really kind of hit it. There's like 100 different open buildings in this city that are vacant. Why can't we make up a list and say, listen, here we go. Here you go. There's this many buildings in our city right now that are not being used. And the homeless people, you know, my little sweetie heart here said it perfect. We look out for each other, you know? Man, woman, or whatever, we look out for each other. We are very protective of each other.
All right, we do have another caller, and if you want to join us, phone number is 256-2001 or 1-866-899-WORT, which is 9678. And I would encourage you to call in if you've got any particular questions for the people who lived on site on East Washington. I think that folks are very open and willing to answer your questions and to talk about maybe some of the myths that are out there. So please give us a call. And caller, what's your first name and your comment or question?
Hi, I wanted to say that Madison is, as your guests have been saying, pretty much in the process of giving the city away to developers in so many ways. And if the city had or did have at least $16 million to give as a subsidy to a billionaire developer from another city, why doesn't it have enough money to set up a department of, and maybe it already has one, but not that I know of, a department of housing with a sub-department of services for people who are at this moment homeless? And it would include helping people find jobs. I mean, specifically for people who have to live, who don't have a permanent place to live. All the other things people need, like, you know, you can't walk 15 miles in the winter to a job site and fill out an application. Pretty much, if you have to walk back in clothing that may not be adequate, I don't think it would cost too much, actually. There are not that many people who are homeless. You know, most people aren't homeless permanently, and I think that other cities do it better. And, you know, this is one area where I don't really believe in public-private partnerships and things like education, but this is an area where some other cities have done a good job. in public, private, you know, working together.
Well, thanks for calling in. You know, it is one of the things that Soglin said when he got elected that he was going to work on was, you know, the housing issues and basically he was going to hire a housing person. That hasn't happened yet. And if you do look for the housing policies around the city of Madison, they're scattered all over the place. And also there's been a housing committee that's met about once in the last year, and finally they're sort of revamping that so that they can get it so that it actually meets so they can start talking about housing policy. But it does seem like this is something that, well, probably since the last time Paul Soglin was in office, has been largely ignored because there seems to be this fear of building affordable housing because people will come here. But if we just built housing for the people who lived here, the numbers are between 11,000 and 19,000, the number of affordable housing units we need. And when people talk about affordable means that you pay 30% of your income towards your rent. And so that's a huge need in the community. And all, like a lot of the single room occupancy, the single rooms that people used to rent, a lot of the hotels that people used to stay at, a lot of that type of housing has been shut down over the years, and nothing has come in to replace it. So no matter how fast the nonprofits that get some amount of money from the federal and state and local governments build housing, it's not going to be fast enough to be able to create the housing that's needed for our community. We do have another caller. And caller, what's your first name and your comment or question?
Hello. I saw something in the paper recently concerning cooperatives. People in the city are interested in more cooperatives. And it sounds to me like Occupy Madison was a cooperative of some kind. And I wish they'd recognize that. People working together to make something work for everybody.
So you're saying everybody should go to the conference that's coming up that the mayor's hosting? Yeah, I mean, and you, when talking about new sites, you guys have actually talked about it being a cooperative, like a homeless cooperative that would operate with people. So, I mean, that's sort of the model you guys are using, maybe unintentionally, but that's what it ended up being, in essence.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That is our model.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay. The city administration in Madison, as well as the social services community with social workers, seem to have a built-in prejudice against tent cities. Now, no one in this community, in the homeless community, is advocating a tent city as a permanent solution. But other cities around the United States have successfully supported tent cities. And it's worked very well. So I would like the people of Madison and the administration to consider a tent city within the city as a stepping stone to an all-purpose inclusive homeless facility so that people can have a good place to at least have a chance of getting back on their feet.
Yeah. It'd be a little safer to have something like that as opposed to where we are now, which is where Soglin told us to go.
Exactly.
Which is within feet of the Capitol on occasion and also around the whole town. We're all over the place. So if we could get together, maybe we'd be able to help each other a little bit, too.
Yeah, much better.
You know what? That was when we were at the city council meeting, that was one of the biggest things we told Soglin. Was when you close down Occupy Madison, now instead of having one spot, which I was reading, 10 police calls in January, 11 in February, 29 in March, and here's the big one, which is the worst one, 43 in April. Okay? But at least it was in one spot. All right? Now, I have seizures. So I'm over there. My friend has seizures. He's over there. My friend's got an alcohol problem. He's over there. My other friend's got a problem. He's over there. So now, instead of the police being able to come, or the ambulance and things, being able to come to one spot and help out us, they got to go to 90.
I think that's another misconception with all the police calls that Occupy. We called the cops to make sure our residents in the community were okay. Most of the police calls in the 3-4 months I was there came from us.
Right.
And another thing is, I believe these numbers in April went a little bit higher because everybody was stressed out, you know. And, I mean, I think that was the trigger, too, because a lot of people were really stressed out about the future, you know.
I think part of it was they turned up the heat to make sure we were out of there on April 30th. They wanted there to be a heavy plea. They wouldn't come. If we have a problem with somebody, they won't help us take care of that problem. And they told us in a meeting that they wouldn't help us. But at the same time, it just seemed like...
And the closing of the warming shelter next door.
Yeah, that's...
The warming shelter closed.
Yeah.
Like on March 15th?
Yeah, March 15th, yeah.
In December, there were 10 calls, 12 in January. Police calls to the shelter or to the site did not increase until Porch Light Day Shelter closed down.
I think what was most amazing to me, somebody who doesn't maybe always put the most faith in the police department, is that Captain Glady, you guys had an awesome relationship with him.
Yes.
And he was awesome to all of you.
Very good man.
And if you listen to some of his statements to the other media, he's like, comparatively speaking, it was an empty parking lot before. Of course, there were no calls. Now, when more people got there, and at the end, when the population increased even more, of course, there was more calls. But he said he didn't think there was anything out of the ordinary.
Lady.
And there was... There may have been a few calls because of, I think he was saying, you know, when people are together, there's more conflict, right? But he said a lot of those calls might have been had anyways someplace else.
The lady is remarkable. That's all I got to say about the man.
You should run for mayor.
Right. Yeah, you should.
Right?
I'd vote for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, one of the things that people ask me is, what can we do to help at this point? And I'm kind of curious if you all have any ideas, or maybe you want to tell people when the GA meetings are so they can come down and meet folks and talk with them.
Yeah, so it'd be nice.
Well, Michael has an idea here that's trying to kind of sponsoring people for campgrounds. Why don't you go ahead we can help?
I was thinking, since it's only $16 to camp at some of the parks around here, 12 at state parks, but the camps that are closer are county parks. It's $16. You can have 6 tents there. So for $16 a day, people could sponsor getting 6 people off of the streets. And I'm actually willing to work on making sure that goes smoother than everybody's probably thinking it will right now. But I personally am going to sponsor Hap on his birthday and bring him out camping with us for a couple of days.
That's awesome.
You're going to catch me.
I know right where to look. You've been in the same place for 3 years. But.
With regard to when the GAs meet, the GA, by the way, stands for General Assembly, all get together and talk about what things we want to do. But they occur at Veterans Plaza on the square at the end of State Street on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays at 7 o'clock. And this is not a closed society. Everybody in the community is welcome to come and stay for as little or for as long as you like.
Every one of us will be there, so you can come meet us in person.
Yeah.
I think that's
probably to get them to move it. They're too near my spot.
We are in your backyard, huh?
You are.
We just come there to make sure you're okay. Yeah.
Thank you, my friend.
So, in the beginning of the show, we talked about, you know, what's one thing you'd want people to know, or what one thing do you want people to Soglin to hear, and I know Sophia and Mike kind of missed out on having the opportunity to answer that question. There's one thing you wanted people to know about Occupy or about people who are homeless who stayed at Occupy. What would you say that is?
Well, for example, I have a friend who has 2 brand new tents he's never used. He's got 2 brand new tents he's never used, and I told him I was going to go get a campsite so I could unload my truck and go back to work. And he wouldn't even offer me one of those tents. He wanted to sell me a tent, and they ended up being free. But, for example, Hap gave me his sleeping bag and the shirt off his back for my birthday. And those are the type of people that are at Occupy. They'll give you the shirt off their back, whereas somebody that has too much and stuff they don't even use, they won't even donate it or, you know, give you a good price on it. I like the people at Occupy for the most part. I like everyone there.
Yeah, the camaraderie was fantastic. I mean, if you need something, people would pinch in, you know, to facilitate, you know, make your life a little bit easier. And I would like to Soglin to have a touch of that, because I don't think he has the concept of what he pretty much destroyed.
You need to bring his hippiness back to himself.
Yeah, get a little bit of human in you.
Maybe
again.
He needs to light up.
You know what I want to say to Mr. Soglin? Come together once
yes,
again.
Yes, for us.
Go back to the old Beatles in the 60s. Come together once again.
And I think we'll leave it at that note. Thanks for everybody for coming down, and it's been a pleasure getting to know all of you.